The Breakfast Flakes podcast brought to you by the Blue Cat Bar and Grill. Next to the Roadside Event Center in Huntley, the Blue Cat, it's where it's at.
524, Mark and Paul checking in. Paul printed something over there, hit print, and it's still going. Do you remember the scene in Dumb and Dumber when the guy went to pick up the gal at her fancy mansion in Aspen and his buddy had spiked his drink with that laxative? And she said, just so you know, the toilet doesn't work in there.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little bit like this. Oh, funny. 46 degrees downtown. I saw that Butte tied an all-time record high for 54 in Butte yesterday. And I could do this all winter long.
Me too.
Please do not talk to the farmer about, well, you got to be happy with the snow, with the moisture. No, that runs off. That goes away. That doesn't help.
Snow is for mountains, and snow is for irrigated guys.
Mm-hmm.
And snow helps us when it gets 40 below because it covers up the crop and stuff and keeps it from getting damaged.
Right.
We are dry. We could use some rain.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice. There's an 80% chance today.
Is there?
Yeah. They updated it. Yeah. My phone says 80%. See what yours says.
Well, 60% at 6 a.m. and then just windy the rest of the day, but that's a different app than what you use.
I got the Weather Channel app. What do you have? AccuWeather?
It's a blue square with a cloud and the sun on it. I don't know which one it is.
let's see here. Yeah, mine says, and they took away the high wind warning.
Okay.
We were supposed to get gusts up to 60. They've since taken that away. Cloudy, occasional rain, mainly in the morning. Winds increasing by afternoon. High today, 50. Chance of rain this morning, 80%. Winds could occasionally gust over 40 miles an hour. So it's going to blow in something here.
Well, and we need the rain. We had that fire up in Big Timber last week.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's so dry. And around Big Timber, you get a little fire combined with 60 mile an hour winds.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes a rather large fire rather quickly.
And now, folks, 40s all the way through December the 21st. Well, let me give you, on December 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st, 46 degrees and partly sunny all four of those days.
Good.
Right up to the holidays. So
I don't want to, but I'm going to turn on my local TV news. Oh, Ed, please tell us we're going to have a white Christmas.
Yeah, and then after that, then have him go over the weather again in the last 1 minute because you people can't fill.
Mm-hmm.
Mark and I do 50 minutes in a row here and we run out of time.
Yeah, we're not even usually done talking, but we got to get things rolling.
Yeah, you get this. Well, okay. And that's the indicator that we're time to go. But it's crazy.
Well, I stopped printing. That's good.
Oh, man. John and I vaccinated cows yesterday and poured them and stuff like that. And it was nice. It was 50. We went home. It was like 20 after 5. And I told John a couple things here that to make note of. Mark's already in his PJs. And it's 56 degrees at 20 after 5 on December the 6th.
So.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that, like any hormonal rage 26-year-old boy. That's great, Dad. I'm going in to see Liz. Okay. So that was the end of that.
It's nice that he's here to help, though.
Yeah. So I gave him some money and said, take her out to dinner. She's still on the payroll, even though she missed today. He goes, okay. One thing nice about her, and she sent me a thank you, said, thanks for dinner.
Oh, nice. Now,
yeah, it's good to see young kids do that. Some kids, if I could only get him to clean up his room. Sophie came upstairs yesterday with a chicken wing. I said, where did you get that? And she dropped it on the floor and ran over into her kennel because she knows when she gets in trouble, she gets that. I said, no, you're not in trouble. It's not your fault. But where'd you get the chicken wing?
Did you run into B-dubs in town there?
Yeah, Hot Dave's or whatever it is. No, she got it in John's room. There's stuff growing in there, Wilson. We don't even know what's in there yet.
Yeah.
I said, John, I got people coming for Christmas. Can you clean this mess up? I will.
I'm giving you a couple weeks notice.
Yes. But, you know, Christmas is 3 weeks. He can do it. Hey. Talked to Maddie last night, and she I sent her about 10 or 12 pictures for my Christmas card. Every year I take pictures from the ranch, and that's my Christmas card.
Right.
I think last year I did have a picture from Jake's wedding or something in there, but I said cut her back this year. Last year I got 50 and I got leftover Christmas cards. I ain't paying for all those Christmas cards, but I got, you know, every year I have like 15 to 20 of them left.
Right.
So I got a drawer full. I've saved them all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that since there's no date on there, it just says Merry Christmas. I'm hoping like...
You're going to send this.
Yes.
The same card.
10 years from... Sure, the kids will look a little older, but I'll probably have different dogs by then.
A buck's a buck.
A Christmas card. It's the message, Mark.
It is. It's the message and the thought.
Yep.
Well, folks, in another expenditure of money that I don't personally understand, the Amtrak Southern Route. Pay attention if you pay taxes. $500,000 to the Big Sky Passenger Rail Authority. This keeps the planning alive for an alternate Chicago to Seattle Amtrak route. I rode the Empire Builder one time in about 1977. I never hear anybody talk about riding the train. I don't think the government owes you train service, and they lose money every year. It's government funded. And now we're going to fund another Southern route. And what's funny is the funding comes from the $1.2 trillion Infrastructure Tax Cut and Jobs Act passed in 2021. So how much are you cutting my taxes to put in this railroad? Oh, yeah, none. Oh, John Tester was for it. I fought hard to ensure that we invested in renewed Amtrak service, and I can't think of a better place to explore the North Coast Hiawatha route.
Yeah.
They argued that the rail line would create the only public transit between southeastern and western Montana. Have you talked to anybody that can't get to western Montana, Paul?
No.
Nor have I.
Yeah, they get closer to the election and they start spending a ton of money on everybody and everything. If you can get support of the railroad unions. This is interesting. Going over some of the stuff today they have in the paper. Oh, wait a minute. Here's a picture of work on new playground equipment and shelter and an adult exercise station in North Park is now underway. Well, that can't be. Bill Cole said we haven't done anything for our parks in 50 years, Mark. Didn't he?
Yes, he did.
That lion fork-tongued snake. Remember he was pushing the $143 million thing.
Oh, they were all about it. And we haven't heard the last of that.
Yeah, we haven't built anything here in 50 years. And, of course, Mark and I went over the list of all the things that we have built in the last 50 years. And now here's another one. New playground, a picnic shelter, adult exercise station, and new bathrooms at North Park. The bathrooms are going to be a hit in North Park, by the way. They're going to like that. Because now they won't have to come downtown to take a dump on the street. They'll be able to Ralph a Buick and everything right up there in North Park in the bathrooms.
And if you don't think that's the case, you're dreaming.
Okay, so perfect. So there's another one, Bill. Yellowstone County Commission's asking voters next year to support a bond measure to expand the jail. City leaders wanted a temporary lockup. Now the county commissioners have asked. See, this is these two different forms of government I talked about yesterday, folks, that waste all of our money.
Mm-hmm.
We have a city government and we have a county government. And we have a city police force and we have a county police force. And we just double bureaucracy.
We also have a statewide police force.
Yes. The city has a $500,000 in their budget to put towards building a pre-arraignment jail, which would free up space in the county's detention center. The city of Billings is open to negotiate the amount they would contribute for the coming 3 to 5 years. It doesn't matter, folks. How many times have I used this expression? It all comes out of the same granary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's yours, yeah. Your granary, because you folks that are in the city are also in the county.
Mm-hmm.
You see what we do here? We have double bureaucracy in this town. Folks, it is time that we get out of the 50s.
Yeah.
We got to get out of the 50s. One budget, one city, one nation, under God, indivisible, for all. That's how it should be. Nope. two separate ones. Three county commissioners at $100,000 apiece. A city administrator over $100,000.
Over $200,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's crazy, folks. All the bureaucracy that's involved in a two-form government little bitty town of Billings, Montana, with 140,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
County's got, what, 170 or something like that? That's itty-bitty in today's standards. No, but, and there's always a way. There's always a way to run things more efficiently and cost effectively. There is always a way. The problem is the people in charge that make the decision will protect their own livelihoods,
yeah,
and it won't be the beneficiary of the people who live there. Along with looking into the possibility of building a 72-hour holding facility, they also want to put in plan estimate for a major jail expansion. Once they get a design from the architect and all these people, then they'll know how much to ask for the voters to approve next year.
Mm-hmm.
They put together a jail committee, which is a group of attorneys, judges, and law enforcement and health professionals and other leaders who have been meeting weekly to look into solutions. Everybody seems to be telling us they're more than willing to pay for a jail because they're sick of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Don Jones, commissioner, said he'd rather start the master plan process now so we could run the bond measure in June rather than having to wait until November, because it's a huge priority and something has to be done sooner than later. So anyway, they're looking at it. They're looking at it. Here you go. This is interesting, folks. I've been talking about this for I don't know how long. Governor Greg Gianforte's office is going to assemble a property tax task force in hopes of wrangling the rising cost on Montana homeowners.
Good.
So we can offer proposals during the 2023 session or next session. It'll be appointed in January. Boy, folks, they need me on that task force.
I agree.
The announcement follows months of uproar after the Department of Revenue reappraised everything and saw property values jump by some 45% in Montana, a lot of it in western Montana. County commissioners have criticized it. They've criticized Gianforte and the legislature for failing to tamp down the tax rate. We got top property tax rebates. The rebates, he said, would more than offset the increase. So what have we done there? Well, the state increased the value of your home and took more money from you, and then the state handled all that money and then gave it right back to you with the rebates.
Mm-hmm.
They did send out a note to all the legislators seeing if they would consider a special section and consider new tax policies, and the results of the poll aren't due back till the end of the month. So obsolete, folks. It is obsolete. Property taxes have got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Property taxes have to go. Hey, hey. You know, they just do.
I agree.
They have to go. State income tax has to go. Property tax has to go. One tax, one. And let everybody that comes in here pay it.
Well, and all the people that aren't paying anything.
That's right.
That's right. We don't have a problem with gasoline taxes being fair. It's just all the most successful states in the country all do it that way. Texas, Florida, South Dakota. No state income. Do you keep all your money? So it just has to go. And you know what? I'm supporting a tax increase for me, because as much stuff as I buy for the farm and everything, taxes would go up.
Mm-hmm.
But you get rid of all the other ones and get rid of the personal property taxes. I told Mark, why should you roofers out there be paying a tax on a hammer that you've had for 30 years?
Exactly. Ridiculous.
Or an air compressor you use for your air nailer. Well, that's wealth. These things, folks, are all wealth taxes.
Yeah.
There's no way to other than put it, because if they're raising the value, they're raising your what they believe your wealth is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taxing it on something that you haven't realized yet. You haven't realized the wealth and equity in your home because you're still living in the freaking thing and you haven't sold it yet.
And still paying insurance every year.
That's
still
right.
Paying property taxes
right.
Every year. Still paying for upkeep and improvements.
Whoever came with that system, they knew what they were doing. So it's got to go. Most people would pay far less taxes that way.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it is, you just have then more people, millions and millions of them, helping to pay all the taxes.
Right.
The million or 2 million or however many millions of people we get to come to the state every year to hunt, to fish, to see our parks, to recreate. they're all going to help pay the bills of the state of Montana. Why? They use our state. Make them pay for it.
Right.
Bastards. So, anyway.
Get ready for a holiday extravaganza at the Roadside Event Center in Huntley. Experience the magic with Christmas market vendor shopping, live performances by Tris Munsick and the Innocents featuring the Clay Halos. There's thrilling NFR watch parties, and join the fun at Roadside's Ugly Sweater Bingo on December 22nd, where we'll be teaming up with the Marines to support Toys for Tots. Come create unforgettable moments this holiday season at Roadside Event Center. Learn more on the Roadside website or on Facebook.
Well, folks, today's December 7th, the attack on Pearl Harbor, and I want to give you some history today. I went and I printed all this up because I want to make a point at the end of it. Probably the date that changed the world in America, no doubt about that. So turn your radio up, settle in, relax, and listen to some history. I don't even know how much they even teach about this anymore, but it was a surprise military strike on Pearl Harbor against our U.S. naval base in Honolulu. Happened just before 8, Sunday, December 7th, 1941. The war had already started. The war was going on in Europe. Nazi Germany was taking country by country. The United States remained neutral at the time. This forced our hand as we had to get into the war. Japan referred to the operation as Operation AI and Operation Z. The U.S. at the time, we were in negotiations with Japan over the future of the Pacific. Japanese demands included the U.S. end sanctions against Japan, and we cease aiding China. And we would allow Japan then to have access to the resources in the Dutch East Indies. They needed oil for their economy. The U.S. demanded Japan would withdraw from China and French Indonesia. Japan had already planned military actions in Southeast Asia and those overseas territories. And what they were doing is trying to prevent the United States from interfering in any of their military actions. And so they decided that they would take the threat out by destroying everything in Pearl Harbor. So they launched 353 Japanese aircraft. Just imagine that. Dive bombers, torpedo bombers, in two different waves from six of their carriers that were off our coast. Keep in mind, this is 41, folks. We didn't have the radar, satellites, reconnaissance that we had.
No, if your scout plane didn't see them,
you were done.
Yeah.
Of the eight U.S. Navy battleships that were present, all of them were damaged, four were sunk. All but the USS Arizona were later raised. Six of them were actually returned to service and went on to fight the war. Japanese also sank and damaged three of our cruisers, three of our destroyers, an anti-aircraft training ship, a mine layer ship. We had airplanes stacked up in Pearl Harbor. 180 of them were destroyed. 2,403 Americans were killed. 1,178 others were wounded. It was the deadliest event we ever recorded in an attack on our own soil. Other important things like our power stations, our dry dock shipyards, our maintenance and fuel depots, our submarine piers, our headquarters buildings where we had intelligence, a lot of those were hit. Some were not attacked. The Japanese losses were very light. They only lost 29 aircraft. Only 64 Japanese soldiers were killed.
Wow.
64. That's it. We did capture one of the submarines, and the commanding officer of one of those submarines was caught, Kazuo Sakamaki. Right after the attack, Japanese authorities announced a declaration of war. After the attack, the British government declared war on Japan immediately after learning that their territory had been attacked in the Pacific. Then the United States declared war on Japan on December 8th. I didn't know that part of the history.
I didn't either.
I didn't know that Britain came to our aid. Britain was already fighting the war anyway, and Europe, they declared it first. Japan knew that they needed economic self-sufficiency in order to wage a modern war. And they learned that from all the experiences of World War I, which taught the Japanese that modern wars would be protracted, require total mobilization, create vulnerabilities with trade and embargoes. And so Japan knew that they needed access to our important resources. Iron, oil was available on the islands. The relationship between Japan and the United States after the First World War had been deteriorating anyway. There were other events. 1937, Japan attacked our USS Panay, which started to swing Western public opinion sharply against Japan. The U.S. unsuccessfully proposed joint action with Britain as a blockade for Japan back in the late 30s, but it didn't work. 1940, Japan invaded French Indochina. They tried to stymie the flow of supplies that were reaching China because they were feuding at the same time. President Roosevelt then at the time ordered a military buildup in the Philippines. And of course, you know, the Philippines was one of the islands that was taken early on by the Japanese. Douglas MacArthur was there. Remember, I Shall Return, the exactly. famous. Yeah, and that's where the Bataan Death March started, and we lost that island. 1941, the U.S. seized exports of oil to Japan. Roosevelt warned Japan America was prepared to take opposing steps if we were attacked. We started negotiations. In the meantime, Japan had already made up their mind. Japan's final proposal was delivered on November 20th. That was, just think of that, folks. That's about 17 days prior to their attack. They were still, their ships were already there on their way mm-hmm. with their planes, but they still kept us in the dark with another proposal on November 20th. They offered to withdraw from Indochina and refrain from any attacks on Southeast Asia as long as the United States, the United Kingdom, and the Netherlands supplied them 1 million U.S. gallons of aviation fuel and would lift their sanctions against Japan and stop all aid going into China. They had, I mean, Japan and China. Look at today. China still wants Japan, folks.
Yeah.
Here we are 75 years later. They still want Japan. The Japanese intended the attack as preventative action to keep the United States Pacific Fleet out of their way and interfering with their planned military actions. Preliminary planning for their attack had already taken place. Pilots were trained. Equipment was adapted. Intelligence was collected. Emperor Hirohito did not approve the attack until November the 5th, after the third Imperial Conference. So here you go, folks. See, this was camouflage. They're still negotiating on November the 20th. The attack was approved November 5th, and they're on their way. They did a Gallup poll in the U.S. just before the attack, and only 52% of Americans thought that Japan would ever try or even would put in place an attack on America. That shows you how wrong polls are. They've been wrong for 100 years. Mm-hmm. The major aim of the attack in Japan? Destroy the American fleet. That would interfere with the Japan conquest of the British East Isles, Malaya, and allow Japan then to conquer Southeast Asia without any interference from the United States. Striking the fleet at Pearl Harbor, two distinct advantages. The targeted ships would be very shallow water, so it'd be easy, they knew, to salvage and possibly repair the ships. Most of the crews they knew would survive the attack, since many would be on shore for leave anyway. A further important disadvantage was the absence from Pearl Harbor of all three of the U.S. Pacific Fleet's aircraft carriers. That was a huge, huge advantage for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them were out to sea.
Yeah.
They were hoping to get all of them. Japanese confidence in their ability to win a short war also would mean other targets in the harbor, especially the Navy Yard, the oil tank farms, and the submarine base, could be ignored. They all thought the war would be over before the impact of all of those facilities would be felt on the Japanese army, and they were wrong there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Six major aircrafts from Japan, all involved. Akagi, Akaja, the Sori, the Hiru, the Sokawa, and the Zukawi, positioned themselves northwest of Hawaii, ready to launch 408 aircraft and attack Pearl Harbor. 2 attack waves, 48 planes were designated for just defensive combat air patrol, including 9 fighters in the first wave. In other words, they would take care of any planes the U.S. could get up to try to stop them. The first wave would be the primary attack. The second wave would be to attack the carriers and to sink them. Battleships were the third target. They had this plan. Carriers first, sink them second, battleships third.
Get ready for a holiday extravaganza at the Roadside Event Center in Huntley. Experience the magic with Christmas market vendor shopping, live performances by Tris Munsick and the Innocents featuring the Clay Halos. There's thrilling NFR watch parties, and join the fun at Roadside's Ugly Sweater Bingo on December 22nd, where we'll be teaming up with the Marines to support Toys for Tots. Come create unforgettable moments this holiday season at Roadside Event Center. Learn more on the Roadside website or on Facebook.
They would use aerial torpedoes, which were designed with an anti-roll mechanism and a rudder extension that let them operate in very shallow water, and that's what Pearl Harbor was. They had trained and taught their airmen to select the highest value target, the carriers and the battleships. If they were not present, any other high-value ship that they spotted, like a cruiser or a destroyer, would then be next on the list. Dive bombers were used in the attack. Fighters were ordered to run cover for them. When the fighters' fuel got low, they were to refuel at the aircraft carriers and then return back to combat. Before the attack, Japan actually launched their reconnaissance float planes from the cruisers to scout over Oahu and other areas in order to report on the U.S. fleet composition and location. In other words, give them insight of where everything was. We had a huge fleet of submarines there, too. Midget submarines, all types of things there that don't get a lot of play. But on December the 6th, the U.S. had launched Minute subs on a training mission out in the ocean, so they weren't able to get as many as they wanted.
I didn't know that.
In fact, one of the Midget submarines that was still there was able to sink a Japanese submarine that came in also into Pearl Harbor. Japan also had another midget submarine that grounded twice outside of the harbor because of the shallow water. It was captured. That's when Kazuo Sakamaki swam ashore and was caught then by the Hawaii National Guard. In fact, back in 2001, a Hawaiian undersea research laboratory found the wreck of a fifth midget submarine lying in parts of the water outside of Pearl Harbor. They didn't know it was there, and they found it in 2001.
Wow, that's something.
We know what happened during the attack. That's the part that everybody sees. Battleship Row was destroyed. West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, all in flames. Oklahoma capsized. Admiral Chester Nimitz had to report to Congress about the attack. And the attack took place before our formal declaration of war. That was not, though, Admiral Yamamoto's intention. He did not want to attack the United States before the official declaration of war was issued to the United States, but they did. Mm. The attack began before the notice was delivered. It was a 5,000-word notification. It was called the 14-part message. It was delivered to the Japanese embassy from the embassy in Washington. It was delivered in Washington at 1 p.m. that day. But folks, the attack took place out there before the declaration was received. For decades, conventional wisdom held that Japan attacked without first formally breaking diplomatic relations. But we learned and discovered the documents later that pointed to a very vigorous debate with inside our government over how and indeed whether to notify Washington of Japan's intention to break the negotiations and start the war. But it was too late. 183 planes in the first wave launched north of Oahu. 6 planes failed to launch, technical problems. The first group targeted the battleships and aircraft. Armed with 1,780-pound armor-piercing bombs, organized in 4 sections of planes, 40 B-5N bombers armed with Type 91 torpedoes. The second group would target Ford Island and Wheeler Field. That's where our planes were. Their dive bombers had 550-pound general-purpose bombs on them. The third group, 43 Mitsubishi A6M0 fighters, they would control the skies. The first wave approach, they were detected by U.S. Army radar at Opana Point near the island's northern tip. They had just training there, had been training there months before. It was not fully operational. Lieutenant Kermit Tyler was the assigned officer. He manned the intercept center. Presumed it was scheduled arrival of B-17 bombers coming in from California, and they were the Japanese planes. As the first planes approached, they encountered and shot down several U.S. aircraft. One of those aircraft radioed a somewhat incoherent warning. Other warnings from ships off the harbor entrance were still being processed, awaiting confirmation. But it was too late. We couldn't get our crap together. We didn't know what was coming in. Complete surprise. Nobody thought this would happen. First wave came in. They attacked our air bases. They attacked Hickam Field, Wheeler Field. The only opposition we had in the sky came from a handful of our P-36 Hawks and P-40 Warhawks that were able to get up. In the first attack, 8 of 49 of their armor-piercing bombs drop hit their targets. Two of those bombs broke up on impact, another detonated before penetrating an unarmored deck, and one was a dud. 13 of the 40 torpedoes hit battleships. 4 torpedoes hit other ships. The men on these ships were all still sleeping, awoke to the sounds of alarms and bombs exploding and fire. They ran to general quarters. And then the famous message, air raid, Pearl Harbor, this is not a drill. Only a quarter of all our machine guns on our ships had live ammo in them anyway. Only 4 of our 31 Army batteries were ever to get into attack and defensive positions. And then the second wave, 171 planes, Commander Shikezi Shikamati brought his wave in. 4 of their planes were not able to launch because of technical problems. Once again, 78 of them loaded with 550-pound all-purpose bombs, others with the torpedo bombs. The second wave came in. After all hell broke loose, here comes hell again. 90 minutes after it began, the attack was over. 2,008 sailors were killed, 710 wounded, 218 airmen, presumably dead, 109 Marines were killed, civilians were killed. Keep this in mind, civilians were killed. Of the American fatalities, half were due to the explosion on the U.S. Arizona. Among the civilian casualties, 9 members of the Honolulu Fire Department, people at Hickam Field, nurses running to the aid of the wounded. Already damaged by the torpedoes, the Nevada attempted to exit the harbor. Then she was targeted by more Japanese bombers as she got underway and sustained more hits from the bombs, started further fires. She was deliberately beached by the naval captain to avoid blocking the harbor entrance. Isn't that something?
That's some quick thinking.
This kind of stuff is almost bringing tears to my eyes, folks, to see how we do things now. His ship was burning and sinking. He knew that the lives of his sailors would be in peril, but yet he knew, damn it, he put country first. He ran the Nevada aground in that harbor so we could get the rest of our fleet out. Burning oil from the Arizona and West Virginia drifted on the ocean floor, made it even difficult for the other ships. The disarmed target ship Utah was holed twice by torpedoes. West Virginia was hit by 7 of them. One of them tore its rudder away, couldn't operate. Oklahoma hit by 4. The last two right above her belt armor, which caused her to capsize. Maryland was hit by 2 converted 16-inch shells. And although Japan concentrated on the battleships, they were able still to get 2 destroyers. Of the 402 American aircraft in Hawaii, 188 destroyed, 159 damaged, 155 remained on the ground. Our air support there virtually useless. Only 55 Japanese airmen were killed and 9 submariners. That's it. That's all they lost in that attack. According to some accounts, several Japanese officers wanted to carry out a third strike in order to sink more of the remaining warships and damage the maintenance shops, the dry dock facilities, the oil tank yards, to fully disable and destroy the Pacific Fleet. That third wave was denied. They thought they had inflicted enough damage. That was a mistake. They thought they inflicted enough damage on the U.S. that we would not enter into conflict over in that part of the world. But yet, folks, they underestimated the resolve and the courage and bravery of America. The initial announcement of the attack was made to the White House press secretary at 8:52 a.m. Hawaiian time. So about an hour and 52 minutes after the attack happened. It took that long. We didn't have cell phones.
No.
Didn't have video. Took that long. People learned of the attack and it spread like wildfire. CBS Radio Network had it on the news programs. The day after the attack, Roosevelt delivered the famous infamy speech calling for a formal declaration of war against the Empire of Japan. Congress obliged his request. In less than 1 hour, war had already been declared. United Kingdom was already in. They are at war with Germany. Winston Churchill promised that he would be side by side with the United States. And from that point on, the rest is history. One of the reasons why I read and went over all this today, folks, is because of what that stirred up in Americans. Our resolve to wipe out the evil Axis at any cost. We didn't have one congressman telling the United States military to back down and be careful when you attack and make sure that there's no carnage on their cities or the innocent people that may be involved in Japan. None of that. Every country, every ally that we had came to our aid and supported us 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And now look at Israel. Israel was attacked on October 7th by the Hamas terrorist organization and vowed to wipe out every single Jew on the face of the planet. And what do we do? What does our president do? What does our own Congress do? They want to handcuff them and their response to that brutal attack on their country. Limit casualties. No bombing of their cities. Go door to door. We got people in our own country holding signs up. Death to the Jews. Where's Hitler when you need them? Look at the difference. And where did that all come from? Hmm? Where did all that influence the way people think now versus the way we thought back then about our country? Well, you know where it came from. Our university systems, the way we indoctrinate and groom these kids coming out of our systems now. Look at the difference. Look at the difference of the response to the attack on our country and what we're demanding for the response for other countries who were just attacked.
Yeah, good point.
Even as late as 9/11, you either are with us or against us. Remember those words? Makes you wonder, folks, do we ever have the courage and resolve to fight like that again? Look what that attack did in the United States for the love of country, the morale, and the price that we wanted that enemy to pay for attacking us on our soil. And look where we are now. If we were attacked again by a terrorist organization, and it's going to happen because they're in the country all over.
That's right.
Are we going to have people that take the sides of the enemies? Absolutely. Look at our colleges and our universities. You did it. It's your social structure. Capitalism is evil, all that kind of thing. But here we are, December 7th, on the anniversary of that attack over 70 years ago. And we still have these ruthless groups of individuals around this world that are still doing the same thing. That's evil. This is good over evil is all it is. Iran, all their backed Houthi rebels, Hamas, the Taliban, all still trying to surprise attack us, all still trying to kill as many as they can. And we want to politically handle these things. It would have been handled different many, many years ago. We would be rallying behind Israel like Churchill rallied behind the United States. And isn't it sad that most of the opposition for a sovereign nation, independent nation like Israel to protect themselves and their people? Isn't it funny that most of the opposition comes from us, the U.S., and we did directly the opposite when we were so surprised attack on December 7th of 41?
Different times.
So anyway, folks, a little history for you. Probably something that you won't hear many other places around the area today. So
not a lecture given in school.
But that was quite an event. And Roosevelt was right. It lives in infamy.
There you go. All right. quality stuff, 618.
The Breakfast Flakes podcast brought to you by the Blue Cat Bar and Grill. Next to the Roadside Events Center in Huntley, the Blue Cat, it's where it's at.